The use of marijuana for medical purposes is now legal in Hawaii, with 4 dispensaries and 2 testing labs in operation, and more on the way. It's a sea change in state policy that has been a long time coming, with implications for health care, drug policy, employment policies, and taxation, among other things. Today, we're asking listeners to weigh in on a broad-based discussion, along with our guest Carl Berquist, Executive Director of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, Ryan Sonata, Director of Legal and Government Affairs for the Hawaii Employers Council, and Tom Yamachika, President of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii. They're with me in our studio, and the number we're asking you to call is 941-3689, or on neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. And Carl, let me ask you to start off about the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. What's your mission?
Well, we have a very broad mission, Chris, and thank you for having us. Basically, our mission is to deal with the consequences of the war on drugs, mm-hmm. what we would call the failed war on drugs. And it's, you know, basically criminalizing individuals for personal use of the drugs that are currently illegal. And one of those is cannabis on a federal level. But thankfully, at the state level, we've had legal medical cannabis for almost 20 years now. And now we even have dispensaries that are selling this substance. So basically, we're really trying to deal with the consequences of the war on drugs. And one of the main ones is mass incarceration, which impacts minority communities primarily. On the mainland, we see that primarily through African Americans and Latinos. In Hawaii, it's a little bit different given our demography. Here we see Native Hawaiians, Filipino Americans, but also African Americans. Even though there's a small number, they're disproportionately impacted by our drug laws.
Really broad-based social implications.
Absolutely.
Ryan, you deal with the employment effect of drug laws, and as we just heard, as Carl just said, there's a big difference between the federal law and state law, and that can create issues for employers, can't it?
Correct.
Employers and employees, yeah?
Right. So currently right now, marijuana is still illegal under federal law as a Schedule I drug, whether it's recreational or medicinal. Under state law, marijuana is currently legal for medicinal purposes, but not for recreational purposes.
So that means you could still, I mean, a great many employers still drug test, right?
Right. My understanding, according to stats we have at the HEC, is that for production, maintenance, and service workers, about 2/3 of companies still do drug testing in Hawaii. And for office and professional workers, it's about 50%.
We want to come back to some of the implications of that. But, Tom, I also want to bring you in on this by talking about this is a source of tax revenue. Is it a significant source yet?
Well, it's not yet. I mean, the current scheme, you know, that we have for drugs in Hawaii generally is that if it's medicine, we don't tax it under the GE law, although we know we tax profits of any business mm-hmm. under income tax laws and so forth. So far, they've kind of carved an exception for medical marijuana. They don't exempt it like they do medicine, but they tax it under a normal GET like any other business.
In Colorado, for example, it's the money from recreational marijuana goes to the school system and has been I've been hearing that it's looked at as a success story. Is that what you've been hearing?
Well, I do know that in the jurisdictions in the states that have legalized marijuana for recreational use, most of them do apply a substantially enhanced tax rate. Like, for example, Colorado's at 27%. So you want to buy recreational marijuana in Colorado, you're going to wind up paying a fairly hefty amount to the Colorado state government.
But people have been responding to that. They've been paying those amounts, right?
That's right. They have.
So, you know,
they have a choice.
Well, there's a revenue potential that I'm wondering how much, for instance, local government is interested in exploring here.
Definitely, they're interested in the revenue. When the medical marijuana dispensary bill was being considered in 2015, the the Senate committees that were considering the bill, you know, Judiciary and Labor, as well as Ways and Means, they dropped in a 25% tax rate. And that was pretty much after all of the public testimony had been considered, and there was no more coming. So that's kind of when, you know, we and some of the other media kind of raised a stink about it, because there's this new and enormous tax that was just dropped in out of nowhere. So yeah, I'm sure they're thinking about the money.
Yeah, and if I could jump in quickly, Chris, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm in total agreement with Tom, and that came out of nowhere, and it would have set a terrible precedent for medical use. We would have stood out as one of the first states to legalize medical cannabis, but then to tax it at an incredibly high rate, just as we're getting dispensaries open. But in terms of the recreational, I think you alluded to how the money is earmarked for educational programs. So you're seeing like tens of millions of dollars in Colorado and Washington State going to that. Our state economy is obviously smaller, but as a proportion, you would still see a significant amount going to those programs or whatever we choose to advocate for. And then I think the tax implications are just one issue. The other issue is just the creation of jobs and just the general boost to the economy. I mean, these are billion-dollar industries. And we've seen tens of thousands of jobs created. I think Colorado had a report recently saying it's 10,000 jobs that are related in the different industries. And that will come down to how we structure any regulated system. We have a certain structure to the medical cannabis system, and the question is, do we want to replicate that for a recreational use, or do we want a more inclusive system that is horizontal, that will involve more local players and not just out-of-state big businesses. So that would be something to consider.
Let's bring in a listener's perspective. This is David from Pahoa. David, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Tell us what's on your mind. Yes, I hear you just fine.
First, I'd like to ask if the committee could address some of the historical facts of cannabis and why it was made illegal in 1937 by the Marijuana Tax Act, and you know how many people it's actually harmed or killed, and why it's continually being called a drug when it's a natural herb that grows in the ground. And if you wanted to compare it to other legislation that's come after the prohibition, how about the tobacco and alcohol industries that are not even illegal, but are allowed in all the detrimental effects of them go unaddressed?
Carl, I'm betting you can fill us in on the whole historical aspect of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to, as David alluded to, the Tax Act, and it was a way to criminalize certain communities. And, you know, prior to that, research was showing and there were no indications of issues with this particular substance. I mean, it's a natural substance, as David mentioned, and has been used for, you know, since we've been around as humans. So suddenly there was a way to get at specific communities that were using this. And initially, I think we saw it was used to target Mexican and Latino communities. That was why they introduced the name marijuana, scarier, more foreign-sounded word than cannabis, which is the scientific name. And that's why I'm happy that our state changed the name from the medical marijuana program to the medical cannabis program to get away from that racist history. And more recently, the war on drugs, as I spoke about earlier, it's really about getting people locked up for making these personal choices, and sometimes choices they've made by not even voluntarily. They've been pushed into using substances by other circumstances in society. So, and yeah, I mean, I think the listener is on point.
Here's a caller from Kona who is an active user of marijuana for medical purposes. Mr. Bray?
Yes. Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to make a brief comment. For the last 12 years, I've had to use morphine, and it's a horrible product. It's tearing me apart. I can't grow marijuana where I live because I live on federal property. I'm too poor to buy it, and my insurance won't pay for it. I know I could halve my morphine consumption if I could have access to the herb. That's my comment.
When you use it, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am, sir.
Does it alleviate your pain? I mean, have you tried it as a substitute for morphine, and does it work?
Sir, it isn't a substitute, but the combination of the two. I have an extremely damaged spine and legs, stenosis, etc. But the amount of relief it gives me, I can't express. I mean, it helps me so much to deal with my situation, and yet I'm condemned to use these synthetic products that are tearing me apart.
That's powerful. Thank you very much for weighing in on that. You know, Ryan, the whole idea of its effect on employment when a lot of employers drug test. Let me give you a hypothetical.
Okay.
Someone is a licensed medical marijuana user in Hawaii, has the card, gets a job, and has a party to celebrate the job that he's going to start in 2 weeks, and smokes marijuana legally, based on his card, at this gathering. 2 weeks later, starts the job, gets drug tested, and gets fired because he failed the drug test, because marijuana does stay in your system for as long as a month or more. So here's somebody who used a drug when he was not on the job, gets tested positive on the job, and gets fired as if he had shown up to work wasted. Can he get fired?
That's a great question. And I think there is a bunch of case law out there that's kind of indicating where things are going for what employers can do. Mm-hmm. The most recent is a case out of Hawaii called Lambden v. Marriott Resorts. It was a federal court decision written by Judge Helen Gilmore. And in that case, she had a slightly different set of facts from your hypothetical, but if I can just go over those really fast, I think it might answer your question.
Yeah.
In the Lambden case, an employee had applied for a medical marijuana card, and it takes about 3 weeks to get a card in the state of Hawaii. Within those 3 weeks, that employee took a drug test, failed a drug test, and then told the employer that he had applied for a medical marijuana card, but didn't quite have it yet. The employer still fired the individual, and Judge Gilmore upheld the termination for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One was that marijuana was still an illegal drug under federal law, under Schedule I. Number two, that the employee had violated a company's drug-free workplace policy. And based on those two reasons, Judge Gilmore held that the termination was legal under the law.
So this could happen, right?
It could, and I mean, obviously, Ryan is absolutely correct about this current case, but I just want to point out there is other case law out there showing a slightly different trend, and mainly that's in cases where the state laws have protections written into the statute for patients. In this case, not only did the patient not have a card yet, but our state law is silent on this. There is no protection for patients. So what we're going to advocate for in the next legislative session and have for some time is to write in explicit protections, because in the states where those protections exist, courts have upheld them or at least not dismissed them, any claims by these fired employees. They give them a chance to appeal those firings in the cases of either being a patient or testing positively for cannabis. So we want at least our state to have those protections in so that our courts can settle that, because the courts have also ruled that federal law does not preempt state laws. The problem is here that we don't have such a state law with these protections. So we need to add that, and then we can see what our courts will say.
You're a veteran of Capital Observer. Is the political will there for those changes you just mentioned?
Well, I do know that over the last several years there have been lots of attempts to add protected classes to our employment discrimination laws, like you can't discriminate against people who are taking a nap or people who are having breaks or a lot of these things just, you know, were tried and failed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure there's the political will to give protected classifications to drug users. Somebody who has a card may have there may be a different story, different argument, but I haven't really seen that discussion play out yet.
Ryan, what were you getting ready to say? This has implications for employment law in particular.
Right. So when Carl mentioned the cases from the mainland, I wanted to just make it clear that those cases specifically said that you cannot terminate somebody for being a medical marijuana card holder.
Mm-hmm.
In Hawaii, for your hypothetical, we don't have that kind of law currently in place. There have been a couple of attempts in the past few years to create such a law in Hawaii, but right now there is no such law here. And so I don't think we can actually use the Rhode Island or Connecticut cases as guidance for where a court would go in Hawaii because those laws are so different. We do have other cases, though, from California, Oregon, Washington, Montana, Alaska, and Colorado that have all also said under state law an employer can terminate a person's employment for failing a drug test for marijuana, even if they were a medical marijuana card holder. Then there was a recent case from Massachusetts which had a similar set of facts, but in that case, the court said, before you fire somebody, we actually want you to engage in what's called this interactive process. In other words, talk with the employee and figure out, is there a way where we can accommodate your situation? Because in most of these cases, the individual files suit claiming that they have a disability, and that's why they take medical marijuana, to alleviate pain, right? So in the Massachusetts case, the court had said, we want the employers to at least talk to the employees and figure out what kind of accommodations can be provided for the employee. They're not seeing it to let the employee still smoke marijuana, but give them a chance and maybe use other medications. Get off marijuana instead of using the drug. And after you do that, then you take the next step. The next step might still be a termination or might be an accommodation. And that's kind of where the cases are going.
Well, let me just also add that, we have to be careful about the jurisdictions that we're talking about, because right now there are three classes of jurisdictions in the country. One is that a state has not legalized marijuana for any purpose, right? Another class is those that have legalized it for medicinal purposes only, and that's where
that's us.
That's where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a class of states that have legalized it generally. So for recreational as well as medicinal use, and that's where a lot of this case law is coming from, like Washington, Colorado, Oregon, Alaska. All of those states have they fall into this last class of jurisdictions, and I think right now we're in a very different state from the recreational classes.
I just wanted to quickly add. I mean, Ryan is right. Regarding our, as I mentioned earlier, our state statute is silent on this, and that's a big problem. So we need to address that. Regarding the Massachusetts case, this is a Massachusetts Supreme Court case written by a 6-judge panel. This would be highly persuasive, as law students or lawyers like Ryan say, for our state courts, I believe. So the idea is to get this written into the statute. And specifically on disability issues, the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission in 2015 testified that we need to insert this kind of language to protect those medical cannabis patients who have disabilities. So that's sort of a separate class. We argue that we need to have a specific carve-out for patients with disabilities, no doubt. And then we need to have a separate one for all medical cannabis patients. So to write that into the statute, and then we'll see where the courts go. And that's why I would say current decisions are mixed, but I think there's reason to be optimistic that these employees, with various exceptions, like people who are in transportation or federal contractors, would have to be exempted due to current federal law.
Let me just interject real quickly. We'd like to very much to hear from listeners, particularly those who are medical marijuana patients, had any kind of experience with the law, what's been changing in Hawaii in the last 6 months. The numbers we're asking you to call are, if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. On neighbor islands, you can call us from 1-877-941-3689. If this has affected you in any way, please let us know. And I do want to check in with a caller. Aya from Honolulu works with mentally ill patients. Aya, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear just fine.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just wanted to contribute and say that I work with the mentally ill, many of whom are impoverished, and I've seen such good positive results from their use of medical marijuana, or just marijuana in general, even if they don't have a medical card. They've definitely, you know, it improves their just overall well-being and their mental state. And also many are in pain from various ailments, so it improves that too. I mean, this isn't the case in every situation, but in general, I've seen really good positive results.
What kind of mental states? Depression?
Yeah, the ones that I've seen the best results are in PTSD and major depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just it being legal now would help with just the legal system in general. You have a lot of these people who don't have a lot of money, and they get arrested for having a small amount of marijuana on them, and then they end up having to pay fines and or maybe even being in jail, which can impact their housing stability. If they have housing, it can impact their ability to get their Social Security. Just jail time has a great impact on things like that.
Carl, what are the numbers on prison inmates and marijuana charges these days?
So if I could briefly first just address the two last callers
sure.
from Kona and Honolulu. You know, we sit on the Medical Cannabis Oversight Working Group at the legislature. We're meeting this afternoon at 1 o'clock. And our main purpose on that committee is to fight for patients' rights. So we've talked about employees. Another thing we're talking about is insurance coverage, as the caller from Kona mentioned. We're working with the dispensary owners and trying to get more statute change so insurance could possibly cover this. It's a state-approved medicine, so we need to work on that. And regarding the prices, we're also working with the dispensaries to introduce some kind of staggered scale for people depending on income. And they're willing to be accommodating there, I believe. So we hope to make this medicine more available at lower prices, but also through insurance. In terms of incarceration, thankfully, Hawaii generally does not incarcerate people for cannabis possession. For medical cannabis patients, there are affirmative defenses in the law, so they're unlikely to be convicted of anything if they have the right documentation. But that being said, we still have 800 arrests per year for cannabis of adults, about 600 for juveniles. And most of those are convicted and fined, as the caller mentioned. And just because they're not incarcerated doesn't mean there are no consequences. They are criminalized. You know, as I mentioned before on a previous program, my last question on my federal student loan application for law school was, have you been convicted of any substance, controlled substance?
Mm-hmm.
That you need to be truthful on that. And all kinds of, there are hundreds of collateral consequences of a cannabis conviction, whether or not you're locked up. So the caller is absolutely right. And that's why, you know, if legalization is a bridge too far for the legislature, decriminalization of cannabis is a very small ask, given that half the states of the country have done that and now are protecting people from these consequences.
Ryan, is that a fairly standard question for an employer to ask? Have you ever used, you know, been convicted of a drug offense, or even have you ever used a drug?
Well, actually, under state law, employers are not allowed to ask questions about criminal records in an interview. What they can do is, after giving a conditional offer of employment to an individual, then do a background check and see what pops up.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot ask those questions in an interview. I would also caution employers not to ask about drug use in general, mainly because you don't want to have the individual elicit any kind of response that could expose a disability, for example. Those kind of questions are prohibited by the ADA. And state disability laws. And so employers in Hawaii, at least the ones who are Akamai, don't ask those questions. Some still do, but they shouldn't be doing those things. And if they are committing those kind of infractions, they should actually speak with labor counsel or a consultant to figure out what are they doing right and what are they doing wrong.
We have a caller on the line with a question about workman's comp and medicinal marijuana. Dave from Honolulu, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Actually, not so much a question. I was hoping your guest could comment, because I know a lot of people are required to take a drug test immediately after getting hurt in a workers' comp case. And if they test positive, I'm wondering if that's going to prevent the worker from getting his workers' comp benefit. So I'll just hang up and see what you have to say about that.
Right. So there are laws out there regarding drug testing and workers' comp injuries. Under OSHA guidelines, you cannot test every single workers' comp person. You cannot make them all do a drug test. But if you feel like there is a cause and effect relationship between the accident and possible use of drugs, then you can test those individuals. And if it turns out that somebody was high or drunk when they got into an accident at work, they might be disqualified from workers' comp benefits.
You know, so many of the questions and answers that we've been getting are talking about something that is clearly in a transitional, unfocused state to this point, right? We, you know, there's the disparity between federal and state laws. In so many ways, we're in a transition. How difficult is it going to be to know where it's going to take us?
Well, I think it really depends on leadership at the highest levels. In other states, fear of federal consequences has not prevented the implementation of a recreational cannabis system. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, here in Hawaii, fear of federal consequences prevents us from writing in employee protections in our state laws. So I think we're a little too cautious when it comes to moving the dial, because this is how it's done. It's the states are labs of democracy, and we need to see where we can go. And it's not like we're going to be the first to do pretty much any of the things we're talking about. In fact, often we're kind of following, even though we used to be a pioneer. So I think if we can argue that, the state laws are going to change what's happening in other states, and eventually, the critical mass is going to be reached, and then ultimately federal law will be changed. And do we want to wait till then, or do we want to kind of be part of the train that changes?
Well, I would kind of caution against, being a pioneer, because if you're a pioneer, that almost certainly means you don't know what you're doing, because you have to find out, right? You're the first person to do something, so you find out what happens. That you can do sometimes if you've got, collateral expertise around, the particular area. I've seen people argue that, we ought to be the first in the nation to implement a carbon tax because we're so environmentally friendly here, and our environment is so dependent upon it. But I'm not really sure we have any special expertise in cannabis, except that we grow a lot of it.
Well, I think
consume a lot of it.
I mean, it's a fair point, but I would still say that we do have expertise with a state legal system since 2000, and 20,000 patients nearly registered, and so I think we do have some experience. And the word pioneer is kind of in quotes, because again, I think we would be following a lot of other states that have already done some of these things. So the question is just, do we worry about a crackdown by Attorney General Sessions or President Trump and say we can't do anything, or do we try to kind of move the dial a little bit to protect Hawaii's residents?
Ryan, we were talking about Attorney General Sessions a little bit earlier. We have an Attorney General who is clearly against any use of marijuana. What kind of message is he sending to the states?
He is sending a message that is kind of in line with what you would expect from his stance. He's a very conservative person, mm-hmm. and he's working under our President Trump. And so what had happened was, up until September 30 of this year, there was an Appropriations Act that was passed that said that the DOJ and DEA couldn't use any federal funds to enforce marijuana laws against states or dispensaries that were legally selling marijuana pursuant to a state law. Mm-hmm. This year in April, Attorney General Sessions had created a task force that basically sought to figure out where should the government go in the future, right? Should they enforce marijuana laws or not? My personal belief is that he expected the task force to come back and say, yes, crack down on these different states. But much to his surprise, the task force came back and said, let's kind of maintain the status quo for now. Mm-hmm. We've flip-flopped so many times over the past 7 years. We don't want to keep flip-flopping. So then what he did was actually, to me, pretty smart. He sent letters to four states, Colorado, Alaska, Washington, and Oregon, I believe, the four mm-hmm. states that have recreational marijuana. And he didn't say he's going to crack down on them quite yet, but he did raise concerns regarding drugs falling into minors' hands, crossing country borders, getting into the drug cartel, and hitting the black market. And he kind of thinly veiled, had a thinly veiled threat that he would crack down on those four states if he found that they were basically not running a program that he was happy with. Whether he's going to do that for other states in the future, we'll have to wait and see. But that's kind of his stance on the issue. And then when you go to our president, Donald Trump, what's really interesting is that during his campaign, he kind of adopted the model by Bernie Sanders, which was to let the states do the states thing, mm-hmm. right? Don't let the feds get involved. But then now that he's president and he's asked about the issue, he sort of changed his mind and he's now saying, we'll see. Let's see what happens. He kind of withdrew from his old position, and now he's saying, oh, we may correct them, we may not. We'll find out in the future.
I think, I mean, Ryan's summary is excellent. I think Attorney General Sessions is going to be in for a big surprise if he actually follows through on his thinly veiled threat. The governors of these states and their attorneys general have all said, you know, we'll see you in court. Come
leave
on, you know, bring it.
Leave us alone.
He's like, bring it, you know. And
yeah.
Again, this shows why should we be so cautious on challenging on medical cannabis? And I believe Congress has extended these protections against federal enforcement of the cannabis, medical cannabis laws until December of this year. And this is a bipartisan thing. I mean, half the Republican members of Congress support this. So to think that they're going to stop doing this, I mean, they're basically going to prevent Sessions from carrying out his threat. I believe Congress and the states are going to resist it. So I always tell our legislators who are worried, I say, maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I'm not worried.
You know, post-Trump election, I haven't heard this much discussion of states' rights since the civil rights days of the 60s when it was a code for an entirely different thing. Let me bring in a caller with a question I think that any of us could apply to any of us. Carla from Kona, you're asking who wins and loses in this prohibition. Are you there?
Well, yes, I definitely am interested. I did a flow chart with a piece of paper, and I put illegal cannabis, legal cannabis, and who are the winners of either. And it is absolutely mind-boggling. It is absolutely enlightening to find out who wins and who loses when cannabis is made illegal or legal. You have to do the flow chart for yourself and just use your brain.
Well, what did you conclude? Who loses?
Oh my God!
Who wins in Hawaii?
Okay, if cannabis is illegal, who's the winner? The pharmaceutical industry, of course, the police department, of course, everybody that supplies the police department with their uniforms, of course, everybody that works for the... I mean, it is just mind-boggling. And then you put illegal, you know...
I think we lost you, Carla, but you still there? Well, who does win? Who does lose? Carl, what do you think?
I mean, I think before the caller was... interrupted there. I mean, she was getting to kind of the crux of it. It's what we saw during Prohibition with alcohol. Who are the winners? And she didn't get to the point of criminal activity. It's interesting how the feds are concerned about our regulated systems being diverted into criminal activity and then wanting to crack down the regulated systems, which decrease criminal activity. Their legalization programs in Colorado and Washington, and I mention those because they're the oldest. They've been around since 2014 or early 2015. The black markets have shrunk in those states. So that kind of indicates where I think we're headed. So, and then the winners are the people if we were to go to legalization.
It does seem odd to be concerned that we will go back into drug cartels controlling it, because what is it now, right? That's who's making the money now. But it's always useful in any of these discussions to talk about who's getting the money, where's the money going, and who's getting it, right?
Yeah, in the states that have allowed recreational use, as I mentioned before, they've all slapped a pretty hefty tax on cannabis sales, the lowest one being Maine with 10%. A lot of them came in at 15%. Colorado and Alaska are both at around 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Washington's the big one at 37%. Oregon's at 17%, so pretty much 15% seems to be around the norm. And our legislators were thinking of slapping on 25% at one point, you know, two years ago. So I certainly think that, you know, our lawmakers think that, or at least there's some reason to believe that they think they're going to be one of the winners out of this if it kind of goes down that path, which and it's kind of a mixed bag, at least in my mind.
Is there evidence to support the notion that we could be winners, or, you know, what lawmakers are tempted to do, which is, you know, benefit, have it be a huge tax benefit? Is there reason to think is there reason to hope for that?
Well, I mean, you slap a tax on something, the economic activity will alter, but they will produce revenue. It's just a question of how much and whether it meets the needs that they're, you know, they're thinking of. It kind of reminds me of what happened with the tourist industry when they slapped on the transit accommodation tax. They for a while, we weren't taxing transient accommodations at all.
Mm-hmm.
We built the convention center back in 1986, and we thought, well, geez, we need a source to fund it. So we enacted the TAT, at which then was at 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, oh, it's going to be temporary because we want to fund the convention center, and when it's done, then the tax will sunset. But guess what?
Well, government doesn't like to close off revenue streams.
Oh yeah, I mean, not only is it not 5% anymore; it's now up to 10.25%.
Yeah.
Well, it will be as of January 1st of next year, but it has not gone away.
And I think just to piggyback on Tom's point about tourism,
mm-hmm.
important for our state, I think we can all agree on that. So that's why the medical cannabis law has written into it reciprocity provisions for accepting out-of-state patients. That's not in effect yet. We expect to see medical cannabis patients come from other states to consume the medicine here that is of higher quality in their home states. We're known for it around the world on the black market, but once it's legal and available for patients, that will be good. And we see it for recreational. How many residents of Hawaii go to Nevada?
Mm-hmm.
They go to Vegas. They are experiencing that and going to as tourists, they don't just buy the cannabis, whether medical or recreational. They consume other things. So it's nowhere has it been shown to be a detrimental impact on tourism. In fact, quite the contrary.
I thought in Nevada you had to be a resident to get access to recreational marijuana, no?
I'm not sure about recreational. I think they're still setting that up. But in terms of for medical, that's not the case. In fact, we don't.
Really?
People don't have to be residents of Hawaii to become medical. They just have to go through the process. So you can't just land and get a card, but you can still get it.
With reference to its medical capabilities, we had a caller earlier talking about the benefits in her chronically mentally ill patients. A caller named Steve from Kailua has another perspective on that. Steve, are you there?
Yes. Hang on one second.
I'm listening.
So you had a previous caller talking about mental illness and the effects of marijuana on mental illness.
Yeah.
And I'm not so much disagreeing, but I'd just like to add some more information.
Please.
I'm a psychotherapist. I'm also on the local Hawaii board of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which is a group that supports the families of people with serious mental illness like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, schizoaffective. Also because I'm a parent of somebody with a major mental illness. And I just wanted to add that perhaps it's been shown to be of some help with anxiety and depression, but when it comes to the disorders where there is often delusional or hallucinations, marijuana, from the experience of talking to patients and their families and my own family experience, can really make things much, much worse, can be a trigger for years of delusional thinking and hallucinations. And I'm not saying it causes it. I'm saying it's a trigger for it if the propensity is already there. And
that's
just
a good
like
point.
With any drug, it has to be taken correctly for the right conditions.
Steve, you raise a good point. I mean, if it is, in fact, medicine, you don't use a medicine for anything willy-nilly, right, Carl?
Yeah, and I think the caller makes an excellent point. That's why we want a regulated system in the first place. We want a wide variety of cannabis-related products, whether they have high THC content for specific conditions, different strains with using CBD oils. It really depends. So I think what the caller references is someone getting marijuana because they've heard it might help them, and then who knows what they're consuming. It could be completely wrong. The point of the dispensaries is for that this patient to go in, and they could be told, no, we have nothing for you. This does not help you. I cannot certify you. This does not work. Or they can be told, actually, what you were using was really bad for you, but this might work. So that's the whole point of a regulated system.
You know, we've come to the end of the time we have. I want to thank my guests, and sometimes I feel with these discussions we've raised as many questions as we've answered, and maybe that's the state of this discussion at this point. But thanks to all three of you for being with us. Carl Berquist is the Executive Director of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. Ryan Sonata is the Director of Legal and Government Affairs for the Hawaii Employers Council. And Tom Yangochika is the President of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii.